Got a question for you, Martin.
Okay.
And hello.
Oh, yeah, hi. Go on then, what's your question?
If you could be Olympic standard in something, what would it be?
Oh, ironing, definitely.
Oh, really?
I'm really bad. Yeah, really bad at ironing. Imagine if you could do ironing super quick and you could do ironing super well.
Yeah.
Gold medal ironing every single time you do your washing. You'd be the envy of everybody.
That's true. Does it shock you that I actually never iron my clothes?
No, neither do I, because I'm terrible at it.
Right, I see. Okay.
That's why I want to be Olympic level ironing. Look at this T-shirt.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's a mess.
Okay. I mean, I was hoping you would say something to do with Eurovision, seeing as we're trying to get a Eurovision song together. But ironing, okay, that's brilliant.
I've missed my chance, haven't I?
That really bodes well for our Eurovision chances. Thank you very much, Martin. And welcome everybody to this edition of Nolpois.
Nolpois is shameful.
Nolpois is lack of respect for Euros.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Nolpois is no fun.
Yeah, welcome. I think I very much missed a trick there, didn't I?
You really did, but ironing.
yeah, it would be useful. Welcome to this Eurovision fan podcast. It's called Nolpois, and it's Laura, it's Martin.
Hello.
We don't know everything there is to know about Eurovision, but we're learning. And we also, on this podcast, love meeting Eurovision fans. That is a big part of it. And today, we've found one. We've found one from the world of celebrity. Yeah, ooh. UK broadcaster and political commentator Ian Dale from UK radio station LBC is a big Eurovision fan, and he's going to be on very, very soon chatting about his love of the contest and some of his favourite memories. He's been, I think, a few times, so we're going to talk to Ian about all of that in just a second. First, I wanted to talk to you, Laura, about Eurovision Again.
Yes.
Which, for anybody who hasn't come across this, is a thing they do on YouTube.
It is indeed, and it's basically where they revisit a year in Eurovision history. They play the contest, it goes out on YouTube, and everyone can watch along. It's as if it's like out live again, and it's out normally for a week after. And this time they are doing Athens 2006. And what's interesting about this version is they're using a never seen before high definition cut of the 2006 contest held in Athens. It's going to be broadcast for the first time. You're able to watch it for free on the official Eurovision YouTube channel, which is quite exciting, actually. And I guess because it was Lordi who won, it's quite exciting that it's in HD, because there's a lot of detail on their faces.
There is. They filmed it in HD at the time, but obviously never broadcast it in HD because no one had HD tellies and no one had the ability to do it. So they filmed it, but it's never been seen. They've spent ages putting the footage together. I've been having a look at some of the comparisons between the what you actually saw if you were watching the TV that year and what you will see if you watch this HD footage. And I have to say, without kind of geeking out too much about it, I think it's really cool. And the great thing about this one is because they've received special permission and that footage never actually was broadcast, for some reason they're allowed to leave it up online forever. So you'll be able to go and watch it whenever you want. Just something, just if you fancy doing something over the next few days and you want to watch an old contest, maybe go back to 2006 and relive what was going on in Athens.
And it's quite exciting to know, but I'll just say this, that they only discovered this box of tapes marked ESE 2006 final. They discovered it at Broadcasting House in Athens in 2019 in the audiovisual archive. So they basically searched for these kind of tapes of clean commentary of all these shows, and they didn't discover it until 2019, and they've now been able to digitize it and everything. So this is going to be the first time it's being properly shown. So very exciting to catch that.
Well done, lads. Elsewhere, the Olympics are happening at the moment in Japan.
Ironing, though.
You might know, no ironing. Yeah. And obviously, lots of people wanting to know the medal table. Who's going to get more gold medals? Who's going to top the medal table and be best? Is it going to be China? Is it going to be the USA? Have you ever considered what Eurovision would be like if that's the way it was done, as a medal table? So over time, and this is what the Eurovision people have been doing recently. This is what they do when they haven't got Eurovision to worry about for a few months, right? They go through all the stats and work out what a Eurovision medal table would look like.
Amazing.
Love this. I'll just go through the top five for you. So in five would be the Netherlands with five golds, a silver and a bronze. France would be next with five golds, five silvers and seven bronzes. Then it's the UK in three with five golds, 15 silvers. So yeah. The UK comes second 15 times and three bronzes. Then it's Sweden, six golds, one silver and six bronzes. And in first place, you probably have guessed this, Ireland are the winners with seven golds, four silvers and a bronze.
So that's like you said, the golds translate to how many times they came first, silver second, bronze third. I think it's interesting as well. They've also done a wooden spoon league. So this is basically the countries that have come last and also the how many times they've scored zero. We'll do a top five for that, shall we? And I will just say the United Kingdom are not in the top five. They are eighth in this table, which I thought they'd be a little bit higher, but they are sort of just underneath Spain and Switzerland. But Germany is in the fifth place. Then it's Austria, which I'm quite surprised at. Then Belgium, then Finland. And first, I think people would be able to guess this, it's Norway. They've come last 11 times and they got 0 points four times.
Oh, poor old Norway.
I know.
Poor old Norway.
I know.
Never mind.
Poor old Alexander Rybak.
Better luck next time.
Better luck next time.
Now, here on Nullpoint, we are always keen to chat to Eurovision fans. Ian Dale is a UK broadcaster on LBC, he's a political pundit, and perhaps surprisingly, a massive fan of the song contest. Welcome to the podcast, Ian.
Why do you say it's a surprise that I'm a massive fan?
Well, but
I mean, I'm gay, isn't it obligatory?
How big a fan are you of the song contest?
Well, I suppose I first got into it in the early 1970s. I can remember Cliff Richard doing Power to All Our Friends. I can remember Mary Hopkin, I think, entered as well, didn't she? I can remember her. She had a Saturday night BBC programme. And then, of course, ABBA in 1974. And I think it was really that really sparked it. And Olivia Newton-John, Long Live Love. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Absolutely loved that. But now here's a question for you. This will test whether you're a true Eurovision fan. Do you know the B-side of Long Live Love?
Oh, goodness me. No, of course I don't. Do you know, Martin?
No, not a clue.
Angel Eyes, which I have on my phone here, which had I thought about it, I could have actually got up and played to you, but it's actually rather good. So it really stems from that period. And I used to, I mean, I've always been a bit slightly autistic on lists and scoring things. So even when I was like 12 or 13, I would make a list of all the countries and then I would score them for about five or six different categories to work out what I thought ought to be the winner. And I did that right through the 70s, probably way into the 80s as well. I don't do it anymore, I have to say.
What were the categories?
Things like star quality and sort of the tune and the staging and all. I had about five or six. I think one year I had about 10. But I think the mid to late 70s were a real heyday of Eurovision. And there were some fantastic songs. And there's some very, very bad songs as well, it has to be said. I actually went to the contest a couple of times in the 1990s. I went to Dublin in 1994, which is when Riverdance was first performed. And I was actually one of the first people to see it performed. I attended the dress rehearsal.
Wow.
And I can just remember sitting, and I hate dance, but I was sitting there and I was going all tingly. And I thought, this is something really special. At the end of it, the audience just rose as one. I mean, we could not believe what we'd seen. It was far better than any of the songs. And then in 1998, I think it was, I went to Birmingham, and it was the year that Dana International won. And then after the thing had finished, I remember going back to the hotel, and there was a bit of a commotion outside, and in walked Dana International. I think I was probably about the first person to ever get her autograph.
Now, I'd be interested, Ian, to know, as yourself, as a political commentator, what your take is on the whole it's all politics argument as to why the UK doesn't do so well. Do you agree that's a factor, or has that changed a lot?
I think there is obviously political voting in Eurovision. I mean, we know Greece and Cyprus. You know exactly what's going to happen with the 12 points that they dole out. You know that Turkey is very rarely going to give Greece any points. So there is politics at play. With us, I think it is slightly more simple in that I cannot remember the last time that we've entered a good song.
Yes.
And this year was a particularly terrible one. So, I mean, I don't think we should have been surprised this year to get no points at all, because it was a terrible song, an absolute shocker. So I don't think there's a plot because of Brexit to vote Britain down. We didn't get many points before Brexit. So it's an easy thing for people to say, but I think it can be exaggerated.
Do you find that that can be a little irritating as a Eurovision fan, constantly having politics kind of thrown into the mix when it comes to talking about how one particular country is faring, when you just want to say, well, yeah, the song was rubbish, but then you're having Brexit as an argument and all sorts of different reasons given as just an excuse for why we don't send great songs?
Eurovision is a great time for people to express xenophobia in an acceptable way. I mean, if you do it with humour. On Eurovision nights now, for about the last 5 or 6 years, Julia Hartley Brewer, who used to be a presenter on LBC, she's now on talk radio, she and I effectively do a satirical Twitter commentary of the whole thing. And sort of every couple of minutes, we'll tweet if we think like the Serbian costume is particularly outrageous, we'll come up with a sort of funny thing to say. And sometimes people take it incredibly seriously, mainly people who don't even watch Eurovision. People do sometimes have a sense of humour loss about these things.
If it isn't just politics then, and you've said it is obviously, you know, we just keep sending these bad songs, what can the UK do to not be at the bottom again next year? Obviously, it's easy to just say, well, send a better song, but what needs to happen that it manages to do that, do you think?
I don't know how the BBC select these songs anymore, but they're clearly selected by people who know nothing about Eurovision and care even less. And you think of the money that the BBC have to put into Eurovision, and you think of the audience that it gets, you might have thought that they would put a little bit more effort into selecting the song.
Well, but, then I mean, they might win and they might have to put the thing on, and then it would cost even more money.
Well, that is true, but I'm not sure that's the way that we ought to be looking at it in this new era of global Britain. I would like to see it done properly. They should actually do a proper study of all the songs that have won over the last 10 or 15 years, work out what the common themes are, then commission people to write songs, not just one, different songwriters who are really good songwriters, to come up with entries. Whereas at the moment, I think they just commission somebody and whatever old rubbish they come up with, they put in it. We all have different musical tastes, but you kind of know what is good for Eurovision. You know that it's got to be a cracking ballad or a really good sort of banging tune. You've both obviously watched the Eurovision film that came out a couple of years ago. Every single song that was made for that film could have been a proper Eurovision hit. And you think, well, if they can do it, why can't the BBC?
What's your thoughts on the UK being part of the Big Five? Because that's another accusation that gets levelled, isn't it? That the UK sort of paying its way into the final doesn't give the song that's selected a chance to be heard over a period of days and get in people's psyche.
It's a music equivalent of the European Super League, isn't it? if you think about it. But we do put a lot of the money in, as do the other four countries. So that, I suppose, means that you get preferential treatment. I mean, you should be careful what you wish for, Martin, because we'd be thrown out at the semi-final stage each year if the suspicion is right that they all hate the Brits.
I'm interested in your sort of views on how the UK views Eurovision, because us as fans, I think we see it very differently, but the public do seem to view it in a very different way. And I do wonder if that did happen, a lot of people would watch it, because I think a lot of the reason non-Eurovision fans watch it is because they're hoping the UK might do a little bit better each time.
It's like watching the World Cup after England go out, isn't it? It's not quite the same. And in Eurovision terms, if we weren't even in the final, I'm not sure that there would be a case for the BBC showing it on BBC One. It'd probably be relegated to BBC 5.5 or something. So I think it would be appalling if the BBC ever said, actually, we're not going to fund it anymore and do an Italy. Because Italy, I was listening to your podcast the other day when you were talking about Italy being out of it for so many years. And nobody could quite understand really why Italy wouldn't be in it, because it is just such a famous country for brilliant music and still is. I mean, how they won this year with that awful song, I do not know, but there we go.
I think it's an acquired taste, perhaps.
Yeah, Liam. I haven't quite acquired it yet.
Going back to your love of Eurovision and where it came from and how you've been involved in the, and immersing yourself in the competition over the years, do you have a particular Eurovision memory that really stands out? I mean, you've mentioned Dana International, which must be an amazing moment. You've mentioned being there in 1998 in Birmingham when the UK hosted. Anything else that stands out for you as something you'll never forget?
Well, I think going to Dublin in 1994. I remember going to an evening thing in a bar where the Norwegian duo were there, Elisabeth Andreasen. Elisabeth Andreasen had won, I think, a few years before with Let It Swing. So as I'm speaking, I'm trying to find these things on my phone. I just remember being in that bar when they did it a cappella. It got to your emotions. And here we are. I don't know if you... Elisabeth Andreasen and Jan Werner Danielsson. Remember this?
Oh, I can't. I think I do vaguely, actually. It sounds very Disney, doesn't it?
Yeah, it will be a good film soundtrack, as you said. Anyway, you probably have to pay royalties if I play
Yeah, yeah,
much
yeah. We do. As long as we review it, it's all kosher.
Okay, well, we can review it, and it was brilliant. Yeah. So,
I think a lot of what you're saying is kind of playing into the hands of something that we were talking about on our last podcast. This idea of Eurovision, not in a political way, but in a kind of human to human way, has this unique way of bringing people and bringing the continent of Europe together and unifying and uniting people. And I think those examples there really kind of show that.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is something to that, in that often there are different conflicts in Europe, and obviously Russia is seen as a bit of an ogre at the moment, the Hungarian government too. But Eurovision can actually bring people together. I mean, it does get political, obviously, when sort of you get different countries accusing others of this, that, or the other. Or certainly my experience of attending to contests is that it's just a wonderful occasion. If anybody gets a chance to go, I'd highly recommend it. I lived in Germany for a time, and of course, Eurovision is massive in Germany, but Germany had never done anything in Eurovision until the year I lived there, actually, 1983, when Nicole won with Ein bisschen Frieden. And that was just a massive moment for Germany. I think it was almost as if the war had been forgotten at that point, and that they knew that the rest of Europe actually quite liked them, really. Have they won since then? I'm not sure they have.
Yeah, they have.
Lena
won in 2008, I think.
I think it's worth asking in that case, what is your favourite Eurovision song?
One of the ones that I really, it goes back to the 1970s. In fact, let me see if I can definitely find this. I have about 1,400 Eurovision songs on my phone, can you believe?
I think I can actually, now, Ian, yeah.
Oh, no, here we go. Oh, Martin, come on, you must know this.
I don't think I do, I'm afraid. It sounds quite Beatles-esque.
This is a disgrace. Call yourself a Eurovision fan. Just because it was probably before you were born. It was from...
Is it Netherlands?
No, yes, it is.
Yes.
Yeah, I see a star.
Yes.
I do recognise it more now when we got to the chorus, but I can't say that I know it.
Yeah, it's Mouth and McNeil. And then there was this other one, which is a really kitschy one. This was Luxembourg from Sophie and Magali. I mean, this is such a typical Eurovision song from the 70s, isn't it?
It really is.
Papa Penguin.
It very much feeds into the novelty songs of the 1970s, doesn't it? Lots of people are very big fans of novelty songs in the 70s, and they're really going for that market, I think. Ian, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. I think we've covered everything from politics to cheesy 1970s pop songs. It's been absolutely great. Thank you so much for coming on, and we'll have to speak to you again, maybe nearer May, to get your thoughts on all the entries as they're put forward for 2022.
And we can go through some of my favourites from the 1980s then as well.
Yeah, hooray!
Or maybe not. All right, thanks very much.
Now, Martin, I just wanted to check, and I hope it's all right that I do, that Do you know that we have a YouTube channel?
Yes.
Good.
I know that we have a YouTube channel.
Oh, thank goodness for that. Well, I wanted to bring this up especially, Marcia, because do you know that we have a new YouTube video out?
We do have a new YouTube video out. It's very exciting. I was watching it earlier on.
Yes, with his critical eye, no doubt, raking notes going, Laura needs to change this in editing.
All right.
It's too late. It's too late, Martin. It's out. It's too late. It took me a while, that video. Mainly because I'm not very good at it. Anyway, yes, so this is, if you like the podcast, you might like to see our lovely faces, but you might also like to hear a bit more of our content because it's different to the podcast. The YouTube videos, basically what we do is each one, we look back at a particular act that scored nul point in Eurovision history, and we decide, did it deserve to get that nul point? So it's basically a reaction video where we're looking at back at old nul point videos. This time we looked at Norway. It was Tor Endresen. I'm probably going to say that'll be a correction corner for next week. But
yeah, we've got away with it this week, haven't we?
We did get away!
We didn't have to do any corrections this week. Phew.
I love that's how we see it. We just get away with it. Well, we got away with that. we were accurate. That's what we mean by that. Not we got away with it. But yes. Yeah, for Norway, he sang San Francisco. It was in 1997. We decided, did he deserve to get those nul points? So do catch that. We've also got some other videos from the past. We looked at Gemini, whether they deserved it. We looked at a few others as well. So check it out. It's basically, we're just called Nul Point on YouTube. Check us out. Do give us a like and subscribe. And also, more importantly, in the comments, let us know what you think.
Absolutely.
Now, Martin, I really want to know, what time is it?
No, you're doing it wrong. You're doing it wrong. You know the time.
Martin,
you're trying to get me to ask you what the time is.
So, Martin, could you tell me what the time is?
No. You've got to tell me what the time is.
So, Martin, I've got to ask you.
Okay, Laura, just you're rubbish at this. What's the time, please, Laura?
It's trivia time.
Yes, it's trivia time. The bit of the podcast where either me or Laura gives you a bit of an idea of some fact about Eurovision from Eurovision's past that you may not know, and it might be of interest to you. So what have you got this time, please, Cressy?
Well, with that exciting start, yeah, it's a simple one, really. Because of Eurovision, again, being 2006, I thought I'd just tell you a little bit more about Lordi and Hard Rock Hallelujah. You may not realise that that time, 2006, that was the first time Finland ever won the contest. The country's best result before then was achieved in 1973 by Marion Rung with the song Tom Tom Tom, which, you know, very, very lovely song. But
Tom.
Yeah, I don't think it was about someone called Tom, as far as I'm aware. But yes, so they first appeared in 1961. So there you go. That's a long time to wait until they won the contest in 2006. And did you also know that Lordi actually broke a world record for the song Hard Rock Hallelujah? It wasn't during the Eurovision contest, but what do you think it was? I want you to guess, Marcia. What might Lordi have broken a world record for with the song Hard Rock Hallelujah? Not during the actual contest itself.
Not in the contest itself. Ew. My word. Will it have been most time spent at number one for a Finnish act or something like that?
Nope.
Biggest selling single, something?
No. Shall I tell you?
Yes, please.
So they actually broke a world record for karaoke songs. when about 80,000 people sang Hard Rock Hallelujah on Helsinki's Market Square. So they all, can you imagine that amount of people all in one square just singing,
just
chanting?
Going,
yeah, going, Hard Rock Hallelujah. So 80,000 people sang it and they broke a world record for it. And it's worth saying that it did hold another record, Hard Rock Hallelujah. It held the record for most points until it was beaten by Fairy Tale by Alexander Rybak of Norway. So very popular. It won the contest with 292 points. A very popular entry and very well done by Finland, I'd say.
I would agree. Well done, and thank you very much for that particular edition of
Trivia Time!
correspondence time now. And earlier on, maybe a few days ago now, when Laura and I were in the same room as one another,
we
were coming up with a little jingle for Correction Corner, which will almost certainly get another airing, inevitably, at some point in the future. But I'd got the keyboard out, you see, and I was messing around on that. And Cressy took a photo.
I did.
Put it on the Instagram. And a comment. So it's just me at the keyboard, sort of smiling inanely. And this comment from SwishNish1, which says, "That is one enormous keyboard. I am now slightly afraid." I don't know why you're afraid
of
keyboards, Nish, but nothing to worry about.
Don't be scared.
Hurt you.
It's all right. Thank you very much to our Correction Corner correspondent, Playful Mitch, who did tell me that as a native Spanish speaker, he can verify my pronunciation of the Benidorm Music Festival was spot on. So no Correction Corner required.
Fantastic.
Hooray.
Well done. So what was it again?
Nope. We've said it once.
Meanwhile, on YouTube, because we have a new YouTube video out right now, but on a previous one where we reviewed Crybaby by Gemini, the UK's Nul Point, it was its only Nul Point before, you know, we don't talk about it this year. Mm-hmm. And we reviewed that, and one of the comments on that video says this, and it comes from Finn Salsa. "I'm kind of sad this got Nul Point since it's my favourite entry from the UK in the 2000s.
Oh, Finn,
What?
Better than Scooch? What are you on about?
Someone in some other comments section, we don't worry about them, pointed out that it's the song's fault. This is quite interesting, actually.
Yeah.
It's the song's fault. If I've understood correctly, it's been composed so that there are too many different notes at the same time, creating a weird situation where the song isn't either major or minor. It's really, really hard to stay in tune for a song like this. This plus the alleged technical difficulties, yeah, I can see why they were so off. Still, this didn't deserve Nul Point. Yes, it did, in my opinion, I would say.
I mean, it did the performance. Maybe the song didn't, Finn, but the performance did. And I think the jury's all decided on that one, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. Thank you, though, for your comment.
Yes,
please keep those comments coming in. And Cress has got all the details of how to get in touch.
Yeah, so you can go on YouTube, as I said before, where it's just Nul Point. We are on YouTube. Do get in touch if you want to see Martin's enormous keyboard. You can on Instagram. It's Nul Point Podcast on Instagram. Check it out. It's huge. Do find us on Twitter. We are at Point Nul on Twitter. We are not Nul Point on Twitter. We are at Point Nul because somebody else took the handle before us. And if you want to get in contact with us by email as well, send us an email. Are you watching the Olympics? Do you agree? Did Gemini deserve Nul Point? Are you watching Eurovision again as well? And what did you think about all the lovely things Ian Dale had to say? Get in contact with us on nulpoirpodcast@gmail.com. And of course, as always, if you're enjoying this, give us a rating, give us a review. 5 stars would be nice.
That'd be the review we'd like, really.
Yeah. And subscribe.
That would be lovely. Thank you very much for listening to this particular edition of Nul Point. Back again next week. Until then, thank you. Goodbye. See you again on another Nul Point.
Bye.